amendment, which would, instead of inserting a 25% across the board payment to DEQ in Section 9, would reflect rather a cleanup cost under Section 10 and 11, so that the cost initially is borne clearly related to the person who's created the problem. And I understand Representative Minnis's concern that in some cases the assets for the meth lab may not be sufficient to combat the entire cleanup problem. But there are a couple of points on that that I'd like to clear up as well. For one thing, at least in Multnomah County alone, I have several forfeiture cases now where the assets would appear to be sufficient to clean up the hazardous waste material that was found on the premises. I know of at least four other cases which were taken federally where the assets were, in one case, I think $80,000, and in the other case, $50,000 or $60,000, which would certainly go a long ways toward cleaning up the meth lab laboratories. And while it's certainly true, in response to Representative Minnis's concern, that in the past, meth lab operations have frequently been lower-income individuals who make enough of the product to sell and then satisfy their own needs. Recently, there's been more and more publication indicating that there's a growing use of methamphetamine as a drug of preference among individuals with higher asset levels. And I think if that's a trend, this is certainly a more appropriate response, tying the cost directly to the operation and the manufacturing of the lab than a straight cost response across the board, which would affect counties that don't have the problem.
Our concern, Ms. Martin, it's very interesting that you bring this up, and there's nobody on the panel today who has ever been on Ways and Means, but it occurs to me as a little bit weak that your position is that it is unfair to spread these costs, when right now the general fund, which is money that's received from taxpayers from all counties, many of whom would like to have no connection whatsoever to any of this business, pays for that cleanup and pays for it inadequately because of the other needs that are imposed upon the general fund. Part of the rationale that is going on here is to spread some of the benefits that will accrue to a forfeiture policy so that those benefits can be used to the greatest good of the state of Oregon, which is what the first responsibility that the people on this panel have to deal with. So I would first just comment to you that the questions of equitable distribution of cost have occurred to the members of the committee. They have occurred to the proponents of the amendment who serve on Ways and Means. I guess my other concern is, how would you address the concern that if this cost is spread to meth labs only and to receipts that come from forfeitures of meth labs only, how that would be dealt with in terms of police agencies prioritizing their forfeiture agenda if they know that they are going to receive 75% of the proceeds from the forfeiture of a building where methamphetamines are being manufactured.
Madam Chair, I understand that you're concerned about the possibility of a disincentive to pursue meth laboratories in that event. Mr. Bradley and I were discussing that before, and I'd ask him to come up and respond to that.
Madam Chair, John Bradley from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I don't think my experience would be is that you say you have a disincentive. I don't think that we would not forfeit on those types of labs simply because the money was going to go to the DEQ. When you talk about disincentives, I think it's a far greater disincentive to take 25% off the top, because in some instances that 25% may represent the cost of actually going ahead with the forfeiture. I mean, when you're talking about disincentives, if I'm the forfeiture counsel and I know it's going to take $2,000 to prosecute the case, and I know that the DEQ will get 25% of the value of that property off the top, I may not, you know, it will cost me money and I will get nothing back for that particular prosecution or that particular.
Actually, Mr. Bradley, I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that local governments have budgets which they prioritize, just like the state government has a budget which it prioritizes. And if the local government priority does not allow enforcement of drug laws, then I would think that local voters who elect local governments would want to know about that and would want to cause some reprioritization. If, for example, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office decided not to prosecute because forfeiture money was not flowing to the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, I would think that the providers of the other budget subsidization of the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office would be concerned about that. And it's not a matter of just the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. This goes to police agencies, which have always had, historically have had, budgets obviously independent for the greatest chronology of any forfeiture distribution proceed map at all. And we are really arguing here over a new pot. In the past, these decisions have been based upon the priorities of those agencies. I would expect from everything that I have heard that the imposition of harsh penalties and strict enforcement, and certainly capable and diligent and zealous prosecution to drug offenders, is receiving a priority. I'd be very disappointed to hear that it was receiving anything other than that without any forfeiture subsidy determined by House Bill 2282, obviously.
Madam Chair, as I've testified previously on several occasions, is that in fact currently we are funded. I mean, we've had forfeiture in Multnomah County for 4 years, and to some degree our office is funded by that. I can appreciate you saying that the public should know and that the public should decide, but it's been my experience is that it's very seldom that the public is going to decide individually. Was there one or two deputies? Was there seven deputies? Those are things that public doesn't decide issue by issue. They decide oftentimes broad issues as far as electing their public officials. And what I'm saying about the 25% is the first I'm saying you have the policy decision to make is, do you want to take 25% off the top? And that's the first thing. Is 25% the right figure? And then the other question, I believe, is if you do decide that there should be a percentage, should it be off the top or should it be after there's been a distribution of the actual costs? And I guess when I testified before, maybe I was kind of rushed at that, but I think that's the I mean, we have two objections. One is that the percentage is 25%, and that we just, as Ms. Martin testified, we just were aware of this. I realize I just got back.
Well, yes, we didn't look. I looked together with Mr. Stinson, Northside Fiscal, and had this discussion with Ways and Means Committee members, whether it was possible to just focus on the amount of money that was missing from the cleanup budget for methamphetamine, which is something in the range of $800. And the decision was that was probably, that would probably be very difficult to carry through the process, primarily because, again, of the economy of waiting to do your forfeiture until the $800,000 has been paid off by some other local governments, thank you very much, and then moving ahead. I mean, this really ties the hands of the enforcement tool that we're looking at here. The 25% figure arrives us at someplace in the range of $325 was the estimate that legislative fiscal provided. copy of that. Council, do we have a copy of the memorandum? I forgot to ask Representative Gilmore for it. There is a memorandum, and I'll see that you get a copy of it, Mr. Bradley. But the, I suppose the issue on the other side of the fence is that 25% doesn't really arrive at paying the freight for the methamphetamine lab cleanup either. 25% of what? This is 25% of all of the anticipated forfeitures, not just from certain counties, not just from forfeiture of methamphetamine labs, because we really don't have any way to account for that or to figure out what it is. I can assure you that the proceeds that remain after the methamphetamine lab cleanups have been accomplished, you know, if there were additional proceeds, they would not go to buying new cars for everyone in the Department of Environmental Quality. But what would be returned, I mean, the effort sort of equitable distribution to pay for a drug bust-related expense is currently being picked up. And again, this is a distribution formula, believe it or not, by the general fund, rather than the
Madam Chair, all I'm trying to get is in the second part is if you take it off the top and you're talking about disincentives, if you ought to take, you ought to at least look at the costs of what it's going to cost somebody to do this and then see what you have left and take your percentage at that point, not off the top. That's
Madam Chair.
First Representative Clark and then Representative
Jump in. Maybe I'm going back over ground we've already plowed. I'm looking at the Dash 5 amendments. And as I read the way that they are being proposed is not to take the 25% off the top, unless I'm misreading it. As it says, delete line 9, and that leaves you with A, to the payment of the costs of the sale, B, the satisfaction of foreclosed liens, and then C, 25% of the remaining amount of state treasurer. Now, do I misread that, or am I confused?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, what you have to do is you go first to Section 9, and then you go to Sections 10 and 11 to see what other costs you're talking about. And in Section 10, where you see, that's on page 10, line 32, it talks about what the definition of costs are. That includes the actual, the expenses of the forfeiture itself, and other special costs associated with that case. Because there'll be, all I'm saying is that if you,
I don't have any, I personally don't have a hard time with what, with your argument, your overall argument. I'm just trying to read properly the proposed amendment.
Because what you do is you go to Section 9 first. And Section 9, as I understand it, they pays off the banks, or it pays off the people who have an interest in the property that's not criminal in nature. After you go from there, all right,
I think we're not tracking here, but.
Well, let's finish the answer.
Let me ask
Sam Mannix, you do have a question.
Perhaps Ms. Martin can explain it better.
Sure. Excuse me. What Section 9 does is to provide how the judgment of forfeiture recites the order in which you pay things. And under Dash 5, the order of payment would be to the cost of the sale, to foreclosed liens and security interests, and then the 25% to DEQ, and then where it currently reads, parentheses, capital C, clip parentheses, the excess to the forfeiting agency to be disposed of as provided in Section 10 or presumably Section 11 if it's the state.
Madam Chair.
I think Representative Mannix is onto something, so I want to hear
I think if, costs of the sale is different from the other costs that we're talking about, and that's where we're not tracking here. The stuff where this amendment applies is talking about what do you do when you first have got the forfeiture and you go through the sale. You're taking care of first the payments of the cost of the sale. That means to me the advertisement for the sale and the auctioneer if you have an auction. That's the only costs you're talking about there, not the underlying costs of the operation. So you take care of the cost of the sale, then you satisfy liens, then you give 25% to DEQ, then you distribute the remainder as if it's as amended. And as I understand your testimony, you're saying, wait a minute, no, pay the cost of the sale, take care of the liens, then jump down to Section 10 to talk about where we're going to apportion money. Don't give it to DEQ and then take a look, because that operation involving forfeiture is allowed to be considered in terms of the other costs of the operation, and it may have been an operation that cost $100,000. You recover $110,000. The costs of the sale are $1,000. $9,000 in liens, you've got $100,000 left, and then you say, yeah, but we had this special operation that cost $100,000. That's it. There's no money for DEQ. I think I'm reading you as that's what your complaint is.
That's correct.
Okay. And then it's a policy question whether or not we let DEQ take an automatic bite every time before you figure out the special cost of a special operation.
And then on your, and the policy issue is on those pieces of property where you're talking about the value being $500, $1,000, $2,500, is the forfeiting agency looking at it, seeing that DEQ will take a great deal of what's left and deciding the heck with it. I mean, if you're talking about disincentives.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Other
questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oregon Credit Union.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Rodman. I'm here representing the Oregon Credit Union League. Our amendments are those listed as number 7 in your packets. You have also received a letter of support from Tom Augustine, the president of our organization, that sets out the reasons for our amendment and also our general support for the Oregon Bankers Association amendments to provide for uniformity in all forfeiture actions. I would just open myself up for any questions that the committee would have.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Do you have something different from what you presented the last time?
No.
Oh, okay.
Same as last time.
Thank you. Thank you for being so brief. Are there questions?
Madam Chair, Sean Donahue, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Tow Truck Association. I have nothing to add either from what I said earlier at the last hearing. I'm open for any questions from the committee. Thank you. Sure. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quite brief. All this does is add an emergency clause to the measure.
Oregon
in
Association.
Section 33.
Excuse me. Oregon Association.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Janoa Heffy with the Oregon Association of Realtors. We have nothing new to add since we testified last time, except that I do have with me Emily Cedarleaf, who is with Multifamily Housing Council and works more closely with landlords than even more than the Oregon Association of Realtors does. And I just wanted to make myself available for questions or further clarification. We have submitted the amendments, and we stand by those. However, I should say that if the amendments that were proposed by ACLU were adopted, that would take care of our concerns. Thank you.
May I? You're not involved in what I'll call the consensus amendment package?
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, we were not involved in those.
Have you had a chance to look those over, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, just very briefly scanned them. Sitting back in the committee room looking at the person behind me, I haven't had a chance to look at them in depth. Emily may have had a better opportunity.
You have, well, go ahead.
Representative Mannix, I have the same concern. We've just scanned over it. The concern that we have is making sure that landlords who take no participating action with a meth lab or any such activity are not penalized in this process. There are lines in this that say that it's a defense for us, but it doesn't give us a clear-cut direction that says if we've screened a tenant, we've done everything possible, that we aren't going to go through this whole process with attorney's fees and everything else.
Have you? May I follow up?
Go ahead.
Have you had any conversation with others about your interest in deleting Section 15, which is this the forfeited property warning provision, I'll call it,
where you were concerned about trying to think of the term a taint upon the title, there's another word that's escaping me right now.
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, we were talking about a cloud upon the title. I did talk with representatives of the home builders, and I also discussed it with Emily, and both parties seemed to have the same concern that we had.
If DEQ does its job, we shouldn't have to worry about warning anybody, should we?
There are other companion legislations that have meth lab cleanup standards, and if those standards get into an effect, then we've got some basis of which we know that a property's been cleaned up to those standards. Without those bills, we're back into where we are now.
Maybe we should make DEQ strictly liable for any subsequent problems, since they're also getting the money to do the cleanup.
That would be nice.
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, you may want to know, since you're following those DEQ cleanup bills, one was presented at the request of Oregon Association of Realtors, the other was submitted by Senator Larry Hill, Senate Bill 555, and we have a work group right now that is trying to mesh those two together, and it looks like the responsibility for setting the criteria will fall with the Department of Health.
Thank you.
Other questions? Great.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Following the League of Oregon Cities, the committee is going to take a brief recess, and I believe the door is open into
light bulb and rubber hose.
The door is open. There's a table and a phone.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Eric Carlson with the League of Oregon Cities. You've heard previously the testimony about the consensus amendments. The League was part of developing those, so I won't say anything further about those. I'm afraid, though, that I must say something about the Dash 5 amendment.
Please.
I'll try and be brief, but...
We're trying to be comprehensive, Mr. Carlson.
I understand that, Madam Chairman. There's one suggestion I might make for... in addition to the bill, if you're concerned about recovering costs of cleanup, and that is in this bill or some other bill providing for liens upon the property for the cost of drug lab cleanup. That would require the property and the property owner to bear some of the burden, and we think that's appropriate. The property owner has presumably benefited from whatever use his tenants have put to it, and as nearly as law enforcement folks can tell, a fair amount of the drug activity that goes on in rented property is due to the fact that landlords are not very attentive and don't pay a lot of attention to what happens on their property. I don't know that you'd want to put the total burden there, but I would think that that is a mechanism that you'd want to look at.
Sorry, could you say that again? I didn't quite track that.
I'm sorry. If you want to see that the drug lab cleanups are... costs are recovered by government agencies, then there ought to be some kind of mechanism for putting a lien on the property for the cost of those cleanup.
Thank you.
It's the property and the property owner who benefits from the cleanup. Property isn't worth anything prior to the cleanup. It's valuable after the cleanup. I don't know how much more you want me to go into that, but I would think that would be a mechanism that would be worth thinking about.
Do you have any insight into the original plan, which Representative Gilmore
their representation to this committee that local government had offered to contribute to the total cost of cleanup with nothing for state, which I think is what has really been kind of the motivation behind fact that this amendment suddenly appeared in front of the committee attached to this particular bill, Mr. Carlson?
I was not with League at that time, Madam Chairman. I did check very briefly with one of my colleagues who was around last session. He says he recalls no such offer. It's his understanding that that requirement that local governments contribute was simply placed in there by a legislature which was looking for alternate sources of funds. He recalls no offer to pay. That was going to be my next comment. I don't know where we would get the money. I very much appreciated your comment to Representative Hanlon, and that is, where did the legislature expect that local governments would get the money? Local government sources of revenue for this kind of cleanup would come out of a general fund. And the revenues that go into local government general funds are either from state revenues, which are limited. I mean, we get what we get, and we can't come back and say, gee, we need more cigarette tax money, because what we get is what there is, or property taxes. Now, we can either reprioritize, which means cutting some other part of law enforcement or cutting fire service or libraries or parks, which is what's funded out of the general fund, and then when we're trying to do the economic development, and then when people come and take a look at our communities and say, where are your libraries, where are your parks, we can say, we can't afford any, but we sure have great drug house cleanup.
I appreciate that. I think, Mr. Carlson,
you know, we get into this whole, I don't want to get into a big argument with you, but I think it's critical that you understand.
You will not have a big argument. I'll protect you from my committee members on that.
I think it's just critical that you understand how tight local government finance is, and how, if there is any flexibility at all, it's in the property tax. And to the extent that we can raise additional funds, they'll come from property taxes. We have to go to our voters to ask for those. It's unlikely that we have not had great success with that. I just ask you to keep all that in
Representative
mind.
Representative Mannix had a question.
I've been thinking more and more that obviously the DEQ component comes in only in regard to real property, or almost only in regard to real. I suppose some chemicals might be spilled on a weapon or on dollar bills. You can send those to the Treasury Department and they'll replace them at no charge, as I understand it. So, but we're talking real property, basically. And just thinking out loud, now, a lien on the property, a special deed, well, we're going to be selling this property anyway. I assume whatever interest that was held, if we limit, assuming we go with the realtor's recommendation, we're limiting the amount of interest to the property owner's interest, knowing what their involvement was, well, then they really didn't know all that much in many instances. So we're not really selling all that much in terms of real property. We're not getting much back in terms of a lien on that property, are we?
That's correct.
Has there been any discussion about a trade-off on all of this, saying, well, we're doing you a favor, this apartment's been trashed, it's been destroyed as far as real property value because it's loaded with chemicals and you can't do anything with it. If we're going to tell the real property owner, well, we're going to hold you harmless because you didn't know about it, didn't condone it. On the other hand, why are we letting them get away with a free toxic cleanup courtesy of the people of the state of Oregon?
Income taxes are more politically popular, as Mr. Carlson is informing us, Representative Mannix, than property taxes.
Okay. Thank you.
All of your income taxpayers will be pleased to hear of that. Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
We will be in recess until 4 o'clock.
Approach to cost sharing between the local governments and state government for meth lab cleanups is one that strikes him as a good way to address what is basically a problem for all levels of government in Oregon. The Dash 5 amendments themselves, it appears, deal with 25% of gross forfeiture proceeds rather than net, but that is an issue which this committee may want to discuss. He generally believes that costs should be paid first before an overall division of the proceeds. But aside from that, the governor is supportive of this.
That's helpful. Again, and I realize this is a tired comment for many of you who have worked on a mill.
But my feeling is that
there is a
purpose that's been proposed in the amendments, which is a worthy, in the Dash 5 amendment, which is a worthy purpose. If net is zero, 25% of zero is fairly easy to calculate. I haven't seen the numbers in front of the committee yet which show what a couple of examples of forfeitures. We know from testimony that this has been going on in some communities for some time, and we have the record from the state federal cooperative but I haven't seen how those cost out. And particularly, we don't have any of course, we don't have any experience under the definitions of costs which have been made available in the governor's proposal. I don't think we do. Are you aware of any information like that?
Madam Chair, I'm not. Perhaps the superintendent would be able to add some information or at least some better guesswork than I would have.
Another purpose, and I guess I've been sort of loath to speak of it, but we are engaged in a political process here, and there is another body that will be considering this bill, which may not be as enthusiastic. It struck me that one of the...
Is that the courts, or is that the Senate?
Understatement. Well, sort of fill in the blanks. It strikes me that this also has some relationship to the initial objection of ACLU that there was a bounty. At any rate, why don't you go ahead and let us know what your experience is with the state police?
Chair, if I could add just one more comment. That is actually one of the bases for the governor's support, is it's consistent with his overall approach to this bill, which is the proceeds from these, he does not believe the proceeds from these forfeitures should go directly toward law enforcement.